Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land de Grand Teuil University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of March, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Banks. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll discuss the cash grain situation near the Clymers facility in Logansport, Indiana, that belongs to the Andersons. Take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner and hear all about the price boom and bust cycle in hogs with Purdue Extension Ag Economist Chris Hurt, as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures like this: nearby contract in the March corn at 381.5, down a half cent. May futures at 389.5, a penny and a quarter lower. And July futures at 397.5, down 1¾. September 404¾, two lower. And December corn at $4.13¾, down 2¾ cents. Soy complex bean futures nearby March contract $9.89, down 19¾. May at $9.94, 18 and a quarter lower, and July at $9.99, down 17.5. August at $9.98 and a quarter, down 17. November down 15 cents at $9.72¾. And January soybeans $9.77 and a quarter, 14¾ cents lower. Bean meal futures were down $7.70 on the day, and the bean oil at $32.03, also 77 cents lower for the afternoon. Wheat futures for the soft red at $4.93.5, down 15 and a quarter in the March. July at $5.03, 6¾ cents lower, and the hard red in the July at $5.34¼, down 7¾. Live cattle futures finished the April at $1.54¼, up the $3 limit. Feeder cattle at $2.06.55, 382.5 higher. April's up the expanded limit, 4.5 higher at $2.04.37.5 in the feeders. And the lean hogs finished the April at $68.25, up $2.65. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
In the outside markets at this hour, crude oil futures are trading $51.59 a barrel. They're $1.07 higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.89.7, 4¾ cents lower. The gasoline or the RBOB wholesale price, 2½ cents lower at $1.92¼. Natural gas for the day at $2.77¼, up 6 cents on the afternoon, and ethanol futures at $1.50 even, up 2¾ cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 111 points lower at 1,875 points, and the gold futures at $1,201, down $3.50 for the day. The dollar index at around 95.975 is up 0.567. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Mostly cloudy, a high of 21 degrees. Should have surpassed that by now. North-northwest winds at about 15 miles an hour, gusting to 18. Tonight, cloudy, a low of 6. Wind chills between 8 below and 2 above. North-northwest winds at 10 to 13. And Thursday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 15 degrees. Wind chills on Thursday of 10 below to 0. Northwest winds at 6 to 11. That's during the daytime. In the evening, mostly clear and will drop to a low of just 1. Wind chills of 5 to 10 below on Thursday night. Friday, sunny skies and 29 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a low of 23. Saturday, mostly sunny, beautiful high of 40 degrees. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast in detail at the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner.
Support for this morning's Marketplace Morning Report comes from the Friends of WILL. Thank you. And from Busey, with more than 145 years of strength and service in our communities. Busey, your dream, our promise.
It is a Wednesday afternoon. This is the closing market report for the fourth day of March. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson from here in Champaign County joins us to look at what's been happening in the marketplace. Jackie, thank you so much for being with us. The first thing on the agenda, I suppose, is the all-day ag outlook and next week's USDA report. Those two happen to coincide.
Do, and so it's going to be a very interesting day considering that we're going to be on Eastern time and the USDA report comes out at 11 o'clock Central time, so that means when everybody's eating lunch over there at the Outlook, that's when we'll be getting all the numbers. I think it's great that you move the corn and the bean panels both to the afternoon, so it gives us the ability to really talk about what's going on. You know, from a volatility standpoint, that it's never usually the March one isn't much because we've got the acreage report coming at the end of the month. But you know, this year you just don't know what to think. So it should be a great day. A lot of good things on the agenda.
Indeed, there are. You'll be there along with another 11 of your compadres, those are regular analysts on the air with us. Actually, another dozen of those, including Sue Martin, who's on at the Daily at the noon hour. She's going to have a keynote along with a keynote address on livestock from Chris Hurt a bit later in this program today. In fact, we'll hear from Chris Hurt about the boom and bust cycle for prices in livestock, particularly the pork market, and where it is at this point because those futures have dropped sharply. And then Murray Wise will be there too. So if you want to get your tickets, you can do that at 217-333-7300 or online at willag.org. The other important thing that's been happening now that we're into our fourth day of March, farmers are quickly making their crop insurance decisions. What kinds of things have you been talking to your producers about?
Well, you know, we've been talking about the actualities, I guess, is the best word, you know, as far as do beans really pencil better than corn? You know, that's a really good question. You know, if you're just someone who is used to looking at the ratio on the screen, you know, you'd have to say, well, it looks as if beans are better than corn. But when you look at the actual bean insurance price versus the corn insurance price, and then I'll give you an example. I use $200 per acre more to plant corn. That's probably high, you know, because inputs have gone down somewhat, but I'm going to leave it that way until somebody tells me I'm totally wrong. And I ran this example with one of my northern guys, and beans there, November beans are currently 87 under, corn futures are 47 under. That $200 per acre costs him an extra $1.07 for corn. He has a 52 bushel average for beans and 187 bushel average for corn, and corn, even with $1.07 extra, returns him 25 bushels or $25.23 per acre more. You know, if you looked at, in order for beans to be equivalent with corn, using the $200 extra to plant that corn, beans should be $10.22 right now. So, you know, this says to me that when you're the farmer, this is what you're looking at. You're not just looking at the ratio on the board of between November beans and corn. You're actually looking at what your costs are. And it says that maybe we'll have more corn acres than we thought we would.
That would be something to see in the survey on the prospective planting date, March 31st, for sure.
That's exactly right. You know, I really think our greatest opportunity for loss is over in the, you know, in the Iowa, where you have a lot of corn on corn. But traditionally, they've never cut more than maybe 4 to 5% of those acres any given year. And so, you know, it'll be interesting. Can't wait till the end of the month to find out, to be honest with you.
Things that have been happening this week that I want to talk about. We've discussed a lot about the roadblocks that have been taking place in Brazil. But there are just a ton of items out of South America related to exports of both corn and soybeans and their safrinha corn crop. Maybe you can start with farmers and their sales.
Farmers in Brazil?
Yes.
Well, you know, when you look at the farmer in Brazil, the roadblocks look to be pretty much clearing up, although they're talking that there could be they could resume it again on the 10th of March if the government doesn't follow through. Big problem they've had is that there was no central person that they could even negotiate with. And the country is so big. I mean, you know, you saw the pictures I showed. You know, the country of Brazil is as big as the United States. Pretty hard to communicate. Farmer selling has really picked up, though, down there. And their Safrinha corn, you know, they are definitely having issues because about 50% of it right now is going to be planted outside of the really good time frame. But even more so, the Brazilian real hit a 10-year low versus the U.S. dollar today. And the dollar, by the way, hit the highest it's been since 2003. It went above that 96.04 that we've talked before, which is the 50% retracement of the 121.29 high down to the 70.80.5 low. And so, you know, the question comes to mind is there a good reason for a Brazilian farmer to want to keep planting lots of corn? Beans are still by far the most profitable both in Brazil and in Argentina, and had a great opportunity at the Ag Forum, Todd, to be able to listen to somebody talk about an Argentinian who talked about Argentina, and he basically characterized it as a mess, is what he said. You know, so you know, Argentina, they're actually looking to halt sales for 3 days approximately, and I think they're just piggybacking off of Brazil's roadblocks. You know, so you know, Brazil's already said to them, no money if you hold beans. All silo bag sales now need to be reported to the tax agency. So they're really cracking down on these guys. But this Argentinian gave us some really interesting information, and I think our listeners would appreciate it. Ag is 30% of the GDP in Argentina, and inflation, according to this guy, has been 40% year on year. Can you picture that?
Hmm.
This Ag Forum guy, he laid it out the way it is for a bean farmer down there. He said if the CME was at 980, the export tax would take 375. The exchange rate, because they do not have a fluid market, in other words, the peso does not trade against the U.S. dollar the way that we would expect it to. The government takes $3 there per bushel. Elevator, usually there's a 25-cent premium, but then the elevator's got a 30-cent charge, so he gives up a nickel there. And this leaves the farmer with a gross of $3 per bushel. Now, wow, that doesn't sound too great. But at the same time, if you are the owner of land, You have a real estate tax of 15% that you have to pay. If you rent the landlord normally gets 30% of the yield, which now leaves the farmer with 70% of the crop at $3. Average yield down there is 29 bushel to the acre. That's $87 an acre, gross, compared to the U.S. And then if anything remains after all that, your personal income tax is 33%. Was there ever a reason, Todd, why we want to have the kind of government that we have? I mean, in terms of the freedoms that we have here, I mean, let's take it. You know, this is tax on tax on tax on tax, and it's very sad. And so, you know, when you look at, okay, so this is the bottom line. Let's look at next. You know, they're being paid off of May right now because they're harvesting right now, right?
Right.
And so let's look at May of 2016. Corn is at 429 and a quarter. Take that times approximately 25%, you know, and that's about the most they can expect. That's $1.07 an acre, $1.07 a bushel that it leaves them. And if you look at May beans, you're looking at 983 times 25% approximately. Mm-hmm. That leaves 245 a bushel, right?
Right.
So says the prospects for corn and wheat down in Argentina are not very good, and the expansion of beans is very high. Even though it's a crappy return, you know, they can do some things because they can piggyback crops to help add to it. But this is something serious. There's no question about that, and it definitely says to me what I believe is very true, and that is we will continue to be number one in corn production and everything, but South America is going to come back, and they're going to come back and be number one in beans. There's no question. And
USDA is saying that will be the case. We'll talk more about that probably, too, during our All-Day Ag Outlook. Hey, thanks for being with us today. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Have a good one.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. That is Jackie Vega. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, and we'll be at the All-Day Ag Outlook next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. So will your director of Ag, Dave Dickey. He's here now with today's news.
The House Judiciary Committee is considering a bill that would require every employer in the country to use the E-Verify system to check whether a potential employee is in the United States legally. The bill, called the Legal Workforce Act, passed out of committee Tuesday afternoon by a 2013 vote. Businesses that provide agricultural labor or services would be allowed 3 years before they would be required to use the program. The Agriculture Workforce Coalition, which represents 70 farm groups, says it opposes the bill. The steering committee of the AWC in part includes American Farm Bureau Federation, National Farmers Union, and the National Milk Producers Federation. A delegation of about 90 representatives of U.S. agriculture today wraps up 3 days of meetings with Cuban officials and farmers as part of a lobbying campaign for the elimination of a half-century-old trade embargo. Significant trade growth appears likely to come fastest in agriculture, the sector of the Cuban economy that has the deepest ties to the United States. A bipartisan group of senators who introduced a bill last month to drop the embargo says farm and business backing is essential. Cuba spends roughly $2 billion a year to import about 80% of its food, and a long-standing humanitarian exception to the trade embargo allows U.S. farmers to fill some of that demand. A new Government Accountability Office report says that the Food and Drug Administration is not inspecting foreign food facilities at the pace mandated by a 2010 food safety law because of budget shortfalls. GAO says FDA's 8 foreign offices conducted 1,332 inspections of human food facilities and 7 of animal food operations in fiscal year 2014, but should have inspected 4,800. FDA officials say the agency has no plans to meet the FSMA requirement because of costs and questioned whether that many inspections were useful. Argentine farmers say they will suspend grain sales for 3 days to protest export quotas. Argentina is the world's number 3 soybean exporter and the top supplier of soy meal, livestock feed, and soy oil. The strike will start on Wednesday, March 11. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media and the organizer of our All-Day Ag Outlook next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Buy your tickets right now at 217-333-7300 or online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You know, markets can take your breath away, and the hog market over the past year, well, that's left many breathless, says one Purdue University ag economist. A year ago in March, the new PED virus was the talk of the trade. Baby pig death losses of a nearly 100% were the reality of some herds. The disease was not well understood, and it was spreading rapidly. There was trade talk, says a Purdue University ag economist, that death losses were so high it could account for 20% of the 2014 pork production. It was a fearful and unguided time, says Chris Hurt.
Unfortunately, in the early stages, the pork industry had no way of measuring the national baby pig death losses. Fear set in among some pork buyers. What if bacon was not available to put on fast food hamburgers? Hog and pork prices exploded to record highs, with the national live price reaching $100 per hundredweight.
Contrast that number with the 5-year lows near $45 per live hundredweight hogs brought this winter. It's a price bust from the record highs a year earlier.
The market adage, buy the rumor and sell the fact, certainly has played out once again. The inability to refute the rumors of massive death losses a year ago contributed to price overshooting to the upside. Now the reality that pork production was only down 2% in 2004 and is now moving up rapidly in 2015 helped create what may be the greatest collapse of hog prices ever, a classic boom-bust price cycle.
Now Chris Hurt says the market is deciding if the prices overshot to the downside. Will they recover, or will large pork supplies justify the price break? February pork supplies were expected to be up about 3%, while actual supplies have been up 7% due to 4% more hogs reaching the market than anticipated. The USDA's inventory count in December appears to have undercounted the number of young pigs. Pork producers, it seems, may have also expanded sow numbers and farrowing intentions more than USDA picked up in the December survey. Based on that report, pork supplies in the last half of 2015 were expected to be up 6-7%. If expansion has been more robust, this could mean 8-10% more pork in the last half of the year and a continuation of weaker prices. There are a couple of other items on our calendar other than the All Day Ag Outlook this coming Tuesday. In fact, on Friday, I will not be here at the radio station. Dave Dickey will be handling the closing market report for the afternoon. I'll be emceeing the Illinois Soybean Association's Soybean Summit in Peoria. You can find all the details at ilsoy.org. And then after the All Day Ag Outlook, we've got a couple of other meetings scheduled yet. March the 16th will be at the Mahomet Farm Credit, Illinois building for an evening Will Ag panel. And then on March the 31st, the prospective planting date and grain stocks report will be over in Sherman at the Farm Credit building near Springfield, Illinois. Check out willag.org for all the details. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain markets at this time. Alex Reed is on the phone line. He is with the Andersons facility that's in Logansport. That's the Climbers Ethanol plant. Hi, Alex. Thanks for being with us today. Farmers moving at the beginning of March, very much grain in your area?
Not as of right now. We had some bad weather to start off the week, a lot of ice yesterday, so things moving pretty slow. But I think that once the weather clears up and we have a few warm days coming on, I think that guys will get rolling.
That be expected deliveries or new sales?
Expected deliveries, a lot of them, but you know, we still have a lot of new sales to make, a lot of accumulations. I think a lot of people are kind of in the same boat. Basis has been improving nearby, and a lot of people just need to start building some corn.
And I made note that ethanol supplies have been building. Does that cause a problem for your plant?
A little bit, but the you know, grinds have kind of slowed down, not only here but kind of around the country. So Our stocks do continue to rise, but not as fast as they would be if we were at full, you know, at full bore.
And so you're not running full bore. How much of capacity are you running?
Maybe 90-95% overall at most places. You know, we haven't taken too big of a hit across the board, like across the country. A lot of guys still sticking to you know, pretty close to what their full capacity is.
And what are your bids there for the day?
Corn, we are at 387, and beans, we are at 994.
Hey, thanks so much, Alex.
Yep, thanks, Don.
That is Alex Reed. He is at the Andersons Climbers facility located there in Logansport, Indiana, or nearby. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Pound Cake Day. The pound cake originated several centuries ago in England. The name comes from the fact that the original pound cakes contained 1 pound each of butter, sugar, eggs, and flour. By the mid-1800s, the recipe began to deviate slightly from the original formula to make a lighter cake. But it was not until the 20th century that baking powder and soda were added. On this day in agricultural history in 1634, Samuel Cole supposedly opened the first tavern in the U.S. in Boston. Sam Cole's inn was surrounded by spacious grounds, which commanded a view of the Boston Harbor and its shipping. Later, he purchased a residence next to the Hancock Tavern, where historians believe plans for the Boston Tea Party were discussed. In 1792, Samuel Slocum was born. He invented a machine to make pins with solid heads and a machine for sticking the pins in a paper holder for sale. His machine was patented in 1841. A sliding hopper deposited a number of pins in grooves in a plate from where a row of wires pushed them into a folded paper. The machine was activated by a foot treadle. In 1792, Kona oranges were introduced to Hawaii by Captain George Vancouver. The Kona had a sweet acid balance reminiscent of the pineapple. Sailors planted citrus trees along trade routes to prevent scurvy. And in 1927, Ira Remsen died, an American chemist. He was co-discoverer with Constantine Fahlberg of saccharin, the artificial sweetener. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on the 4th day of March. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line is Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. They're located in Kansas City. Thanks, Drew, for being with us. I'm ready to be done, Drew. I'm really ready to be done with winter, but we're just at the beginning of March. Tell me, we'll start to see a warm-up sooner rather than later, please.
Well, we are going to see a warm-up, and things are going to get a little better. It can't get a whole lot worse. I suppose I can, and got to watch what I say. But I think the pattern is certainly switching around a little bit here. The sad part of the forecast is that, yeah, we'll warm up, but as we warm up, we're also going to bring some of this warm air in on top of the cold, and that always sets the stage for more rain. And indeed, we'll probably see that, but not right away. The good news is we'll have a chance to drain out some of this moisture here over the coming week with a lot less precipitation for the region, and that's so badly needed. That Ohio River Basin area just totally saturated. Flooding is already occurring in some parts of the region, and it's absolutely essential that we get some drying going on down that way. We are going to do it, but it is still early March, as you point out, and it's hard to get temperatures warm enough to get evaporation rates going high, so we're going to keep the saturation around for quite a bit, and that leaves the door open for more issues with excess moisture when the next rounds of rain start to show up, and those next rounds will probably begin towards the middle of the month. And so we get out to around the 13th or so, I think the chances for precipitation on a more frequent basis will be rising once again. So some frustration coming up again down the road, but for the meantime, we should see some improving conditions.
How widespread is snow cover across the United States, and does this mean it takes longer to begin the process of warming up for the spring season?
Yes, that's a very good question. The snow is very much widespread right now coming across most of the lower Midwest. It's not quite that concentrated in the central plains, but they did get a little bit of snow out there last night, and then, of course, goes northward up into the Arctic Circle. There's some pockets out there in the northwest plains that are open. But the more snow that we have, the slower the warm-up will be. Even when the air masses are warm, the snow reflects a lot of the sun's light back into space, so it does tend to hold the temperatures back a bit. So that is a factor. But, you know, if we get one or two good days of 50-degree temperatures across the region, we can lose most of that snow, and that factor becomes a little less significant. The problem for this year, though, is the northwesterly flow pattern aloft. This comes from a long-term repeating weather cycle, and it's not going to go away, not for any long period of time. And for that reason, we're going to have at least the northern half of the Midwest still seeing frequent bouts of cold going deep into the planting season, while the southern parts of the region will warm up, but the contrast in air mass temperatures sets the stage for a lot of rain potential. So we may have a tough time getting some field work done in the early weeks of the planting season because of this.
Okay, thanks so much, Drew. We do appreciate you being with us each and every week right here on the Closing Market Report.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Of course, that's Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website to purchase your tickets for All-Day Ag Outlook or dial 217-333-7300 right now. On behalf of your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.